Good day, mate. My friend Johnny Fry is in the opposite end of the world. Now, to me, he's always on the opposite end of the world. But this week, you could not be further away from me while we try to discuss things that might be as close to the truth as possible. What are you doing on the absolute opposite end of the world?
You know, I've spent all morning having, not kangaroo lessons, boomerang lessons. And I've been throwing that funny shape sort of thing, trying to get, you know, I'm sure there's a song, My Boomerang Won't Come Back. So, yeah, I'm in Australia. I'm in the beautiful city of Sydney. I'm standing in a window and I can just about see the Sydney Harbour Bridge. For a change, it's actually sunny here today because Australia, or certainly Eastern Australia, had some horrendous floods and rain. I thought, well, I've come all the way from Blighty. It's taken me nearly a day in an aeroplane to get here. Probably picked up COVID on the way, and the bloody raining. Couldn't believe it. But I'm here visiting my daughter. She's been living here in Sydney for a couple of years. And we've also got a number of clients who are based here in Australia. So I'm in Sydney for a few days. Then next week, we'll be doing the recording from Adelaide. We're going down to see a couple of clients down there, check out a couple of the vineyards, hopefully get out and do a bit of sailing. So, yeah, here in Australia, luckily no jet lag. Was meant to do a bit of work on Digibytes, but the internet connection wasn't great. But flew with Japanese Airlines, James. They were brilliant. Really fantastic service, great food. So, yeah, life's good. And I haven't quite developed that sort of g'day, mate, how you doing sort of accent. Because, you know, like yourselves, the Australians have all sorts of funny ways of using the English language. And poor old Queenie, she must really be horrified when she does her Commonwealth tours and they don't speak the BBC English, as you know and love.
Could you imagine you and I going out there looking for like a pizza joint? One American and one Englishman trying to find a beer?
Well, do you know what? This is a true story. I'm walking down this the street with my partner, Willow, and I said, what's... Because she lived here back in the 80s because she was a nurse at one of the big hospitals here. And I was saying, why have they got that sign there? She said, what are you talking about? She said, well, there's a sign there on that bar. It goes, no shorts, no T-shirts and no thongs. I said, what have they got, X-ray equipment? You're not going to look at your knickers that you're wearing. He said, don't be stupid. Thongs are flip-flops over here. They're not sort of things that you put around your bits and bobs. So, again, just goes to show sort of same language in theory, but different words mean different things. It takes us back to last week and, you know, when we were talking to Alex from, you know, if you remember from... Well, sorry, actually, it's not what I'm talking about. It's actually coming up after the break. We've got Alex Bosch.
Yeah, he's from Tokini.
Yeah. No, Alex, when we were talking, I'm getting completely confused now. I think I still got jet lag.
This is what happens when you go around the world.
Yeah. No, Alex. So after the break, we've got Alex Bosch coming up. He's from Two Tokens in Amsterdam. You know, we were talking earlier on. And, you know, as I said to him, you've got a full-time job keeping your finger in the dike. And you were horrified. And we said, no, the dikes are what they had. Nothing to do with ladies. It's actually to do with, you know, all the dams and the sort of earthworks to actually keep the Netherlands free from being flooded. So just got to be careful with the words you use and which company, I suppose.
That's right.
But more of that after the break, because, Alex, not only is he doing something with his finger half the time, but he's also doing some great stuff, partly funded by the European Union, on tokenization and how is that going to impact society and businesses. And they've got three or four different companies they'll be talking about and how tokenization is going to change society. So, yeah, but more of that after the break with Alex.
Now, my only other question is, now, are you able to smuggle a koala bear? And does kangaroo taste like chicken?
I haven't seen any kangaroo on the menu out here. Koala bears? Are the koala bears the ones that have got VD? I think they are.
They got some sort of... They're like the cutest little animal that would rip your face off.
I tell you what I have seen lots of out here. Oh, what are kookaburras? And there's these, they're like little fat, little fluffy birds.
Oh, and they attack you, right?
Yeah, they attack you. And when they sing and sort of their bird song, it sounds like a monkey. And you're sitting there and suddenly they swoop down. In England, we have seagulls, which do that. You know, if you're having an ice cream or a bag of seagulls. Yeah, but, you know, these kookaburras, they're very, 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 very bold. And so, lots of different birds out here. Yeah, what I saw a flat lizard. And I said to the girl, I said, why is it called a flat lizard? She said, why do you think? I said, well, it looks like one's been run over. She said, that's why we call it a flat lizard, because it looks like it's been run over.
That's not the one from the car insurance, huh?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. But we digress. We digress. So what have we got in this week's Digital Bites then, James?
Well, I think much like you and I, everybody's quitting their job. I think I'm out of here. Everybody's moving to blockchain. I mean, I would love a gig over at Apple or Amazon or the fangs of what you call it, right? What do we call it? Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google. They're all leaving. They're leaving their dream job because of the magic of blockchain.
It's bizarre. This wasn't an expression that I was hugely familiar with when we started looking at this subject. The great resignation, whereby in the USA, 33 million Americans have handed in their resignation. They've left. They've not been fired. They've said, I want to leave. It's about a year. That's a lot of people who have basically decided they've had enough. We're seeing, as you say, some of the most successful and indeed some of the biggest quoted companies in the world are struggling to keep hold of their staff. And it's what are you, just for Cameron Air, you were talking about, it's not called, I thought it was the Great Resignation, but you said in Wall Street, what was it called?
So over in, when I worked at, you know, Bloomberg, Merrill Lynch and Bank of America and everywhere else, we always did what was called a mass exodus. And it was more like Joey got the job over at Citibank and then he would bring all his friends in. So you knew if the one guy got that job over at Lehman, that next thing you know, nine of your friends were on their way out. It was a mass exodus.
Got it. Well, so what's been happening is that basically, as we've alluded to, you've got these pretty senior individuals who are now leaving leaving the tech companies they were working for, and they're going and joining newer Web3 businesses, blockchain businesses, AI-based businesses, and they're leaving them. Often they take a pay cut, but they then have some skin in the game. I have some options or equity in these new businesses and going off and doing their own thing. And I suppose at some level it's understandable. If you became CEO of Apple in the USA, or let's say you became CEO of Europe for Apple, you'd have a great package, you'd earn some good money, but you'd be swimming in corporate blooming nonsense and what you can or cannot say and what you can or cannot do. And some of these guys are just kind of got fed up with it and said, well, I want to do something different. And a lot of we've discussed this before, a lot of the new startup businesses, they're very, very more conscious and focused around ESG. These businesses are at their root, the new businesses are being set up to bear that in mind. And that ticks a huge box for a lot of people, not just, shareholders, but the staff. And a good example of some of this, here we are. And this was in the morning's paper on Monday, and it was a fixed income fund manager who had actually quit his job at a big asset management business over and joined a blockchain advisory business. And with him, it was kind of like the mass exodus that you were talking about there. He also bought his 5-person team to head up a sort of a digital assets funds division. And he said, look, I've been talking about the dollar and the yen for 30 years. And believe you me, this is a very, very boring conversation. And he's saying bonds are useless in portfolios and no one's going to want to buy them as their yields are very, very depressed. So governments, not great because they want to raise more debt. But he reckons within 10 years, central banks will issue their own digital currencies that can access decentralized lending, financing pools. And they're saying basically the debt market, in his opinion, could potentially be completely dead. So you've got this guy who he's kind of joining. There's another chap he refers to, Jonathan Caldwell, which if you listen to this, Jonathan, cruel name, similar to mine. He's left JP Morgan, the biggest bank in the world outside of China. So we're seeing people leaving these companies. I was also looking at in the UK, stroke Europe, there's a chap by the name of Alan Chang, who was chief revenue officer for an outfit called Revolut. And the only reason I mention Revolut is that Revolut is the third biggest fintech business across the whole of Europe. And Mr. Chang was employee number 5 at Revolut. So I should imagine he's made a bob or two, and, you know, he's certainly not moved companies for the money, but it's rumored that he's lining up to raise, you know, just 100 million, you know, out of the blue. And he's going to set up a Web3 business using blockchain technologies, possibly using digital assets, taking his experience and knowledge and contacts and maybe some of the staff from what is undoubtedly a hugely successful business in the name of Revolut. It's a bit like PayPal, being simplistic about it. It's a payment platform. And he's going to go and do his own thing. And there he was, almost like one of the founders of Revolut, and saying, nope, I want to go and do it all again. The next new thing.
Kind of the opposite of, you can almost argue Facebook's doing the same thing by changing their name to Meta, right? So instead, nobody quit, please, nobody quit. We're just going to be a new company.
Yeah, we're new, super trendy. Yeah. But in the article, according to a publication called JobList, they reckon that, I find this really hard to believe, but they reckon 78% of all employed workers were planning or looking potentially quit their jobs in 2022. You know, the number seems huge, but even if you've got 10 or 20% even of your labor force that's going to leave, that's a major headache for you as a manager or owner of a business, because you've got all the uncertainty and hassle and time and expense of finding a replacement staff, which normally means you've got to pay people more to do the same job that someone else was doing. But then you've got all the training, the procedures, the processes. So there's a lot of hidden costs when you onboard new staff. So it's big change. And it's not just in the USA. We're seeing a lot of companies that are changing and moving. And this whole thing of web and digital assets and, you know, as you say, metaverse and NFTs, it's getting much, much more into the vernacular. And you know, I was talking to someone yesterday, and they work for a very, very well-known big consumer brand. And they had an internal discussion the other day about the role of tokenization for a major high street brand, a company all of us, you know, wherever you live, you've probably bought this product. And this is an internal meeting, they were saying, talking about NFTs and the role of tokenization. And I'm thinking, finally, people are putting this at the forefront of the conversation. I know we've been talking about James for a while. I know we try and bring the role of blockchain and digital assets to the fore. And we're not trying to encourage people to gamble and, you know, buy NFTs or buy cryptocurrency or anything like that. But we're simply trying to say, look, have an appreciation of the technology, have an understanding of what's happening in different industries, and you'll probably find very quickly how you can put it into your business or your life. Whether it's as simple as sending money to friends and family in a different country, or whether it's actually looking to completely reorganize your supply chain so you can bring in much more effective track and trace and ESG credentials to your business.
Yeah, and don't forget the whole targeted audience of the unbanked, right? Whether it requires a credit score or even some sort of history, there are so many unbanked people that not only just regular access to fiat is kind of hard.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, the World Bank statistics on that, there's about 1.6, 1.7 billion people that are financially excluded. And therefore, it means they end up paying more for transferring money, to borrow money, to get insurance. They're excluded from getting perhaps the best price for their products and services. But as we see more and more people being able to exchange value by using other mechanisms, and if we go back, you know, 1,000 years, you know, we were wandering around, and, you know, initially we were literally exchanging rocks. So I'll have your rock, and then you can give me a sheep or a cow or a bushel of corn or something like that. And, you know, that it was as, you know, crude as that. But obviously lumping a whole load of rocks around you all day long, you can't eat the darn things, and they're pretty heavy. And then some wise guy said, well, why don't we move on to gold? You know, I'll give you a bit of my gold, and you can give me, you know, some wine, or maybe you can give me some, you know, food or whatever. And that sort of asset-backed, whether it was a rock or a bit of gold or something like that, that pretty much stayed around, you know, until, you know, really sort of beginning of the, well, it was really the sort of Bretton Woods when the whole world basically came off the gold standard. And now we have this situation where, you know, governments literally can print money. And we've seen huge amounts of debt in many of the Western countries, which, you know, at some stage, you know, chickens come home to roost, James. That money's got to be repaid in some shape or form. And it either gets repaid because the governments have got loads of surplus cash and buybacks the bonds, or you have a big dose of inflation. And, you know, you inflate your way out. And if you had, you know, $100 million worth of debt and inflation's running at 10%, well, at the end of the year, you've got 90 million of real debt because, you know, that's the way it goes. So, and I think that's the big problem. Interest rates gone up in the States yesterday. Here we are Wednesday, 16th of March. And on the 15th, the US put up interest rates, first time since 2018. You've got inflation in the US running at a, in a 40-year high. And, you know, the trouble is that when we see inflation, it's many of the poorer, less developed economies that really get impacted by this. And the whole situation, as we discussed briefly last week, has not been helped by what's happening with the terrible atrocities in Ukraine, with the conflict with Russia, because that's just driven up, you know, fuel prices, it's driven up commodity prices, whether that be, you know, palladium, nickel, you know, base commodities that are needed for, you know, many of our sort of electronic and consumer gadgets we use and electric car batteries and like. But more worryingly, it's driven up the price of food. You know, the price of
wheat. You see wheat?
Oh, just
it looked like a Bitcoin chart, right? And that's wheat's everything from bread to beer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and if you look how important Ukraine, and to be fair, Russia, you know, they account for over 30% of global exports. You know, so places like, again, we mentioned this last week, but places like Turkey and Egypt and many, many parts of Africa, they're totally reliant on, you know, Ukraine and Russia for their wheat. Parts of Asia, you know, they've said, you know, the chances are that a lot of Chinese citizens are probably going to have to divert away from wheat and going back and, you know, eating more rice because the cost of importing, well, it's just not going to be enough to go around. And so all that's going to lead to more uncertainty, more inflationary fears, and that potentially puts pressure on interest rates. And that's why we're seeing, you mentioned Bitcoin, you're seeing Bitcoin sort of swinging between sort of around about sort of $34,000-$35,000 and sort of $40,000-$42,000. It's a reasonable swing in the last week, 10 days, because Bitcoin, rather than seeing to be an inflationary hedge, because you can only create mine a limited number of Bitcoins every 15 minutes, because that's how it works. You can't just say, oh dear, we need to create more Bitcoin. Can you turn on the tap and have a load? So people have for a long time advocated that Bitcoin will be a good inflationary hedge. But at the moment, that sort of hypothesis doesn't seem to be bearing out. And what we're seeing, it's very much seen as risk on, risk off. So if the economy, you know, if we see peace in Ukraine and Russia break out, you could easily see price of Bitcoin going to $50,000 easily. But if the conflicts carry on and things get even worse, and, you know, I don't know, they're talking about chemical weapons and all sorts of terrible things, then I think you're going to see Bitcoin actually fall in value. So it's not a necessarily inflation hedge, but it's an asset class at the moment where if you want more risk, and Bitcoin's the kitty to go to, but if you're a bit more defensive, then you'll probably sell it and move into something a little bit different.
God, the day I have to tell my grandkids, Bitcoin doesn't buy what it used to, we're going to have a problem.
Yeah. No, that's true.
I remember you could get a whole car.
Well, look at the pizza, world's most expensive pizza.
That's right.
We're coming to Pizza Day, aren't we, later on this year, where that was the first use of someone actually had mined some Bitcoins, and he went in and bought a pizza. And I think that pizza, from memory today, would be worth, you know, in excess of about $40 million because the price of Bitcoin had gone up so much.
This is my hometown down here now, Jacksonville, Florida. So it was a Papa John's pizza in Jacksonville, Florida. For 10,000 Bitcoin, which right now would be
$36 million,
$41 million.
$41 million, yeah. Wow, wow.
For Papa That's John's pizza, listen, I'm just saying, I'm a New Yorker.
Good pizzas. Someone's got to look after Papa John. I suppose there was a man called Papa John, was it?
Oh, yeah, he owned that. Remember, he owns that Camaro. He went, Papa John's pizza was so successful, that he considered it a success, he went and found the Camaro that he passed his driver's test in back in the 70s. He went and found that Camaro and bought it back. So you know when Papa John's knocking on your door going, I need that car. You're like, yeah, you know what? That car is going to cost you about 10,000 Bitcoin.
Well, there you go. But the only thing I just like, you know, the listeners, because, you know, as you know, Cyber.fm is broadcast in 140 different countries, and you got over 4.5 million listeners. I think we just need to sort of, just if we can, fear a bit, Dell, bring it back to reality. And the reality is that we're not advocating whether you buy or sell Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency. And actually, the valuation of cryptocurrencies, you know, it's around about $2 trillion, which at one level, I know that sounds a huge amount of money. But the reality is, you know, when you look at other types of assets, like mutual funds, you know, that's $100 trillion. If you look at sort of equities and bonds that are quoted around the world, that's $120 trillion. Or even, as we were discussing last week, if you remember, with TPX, when they were talking about the size of the real estate market at $326 trillion. And the reason I'm mentioning those numbers is that I think we do need to bear in mind that for the foreseeable future, it's very, very likely that cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, Ethereum, et al., are going to remain a relatively speculative, but more importantly, a small asset class. And therefore, in your overall allocation and the amount of money that you may want to look and put invest in, you're looking at, you know, 2 or 3%. It shouldn't be a big bet. And the reason that we run the Digital Byte Show here on Cyber.fm is not so much to give you investment tips and recommendations of what you should and shouldn't do, because we're not authorized to do that. We're trying to get you to be aware of some of the things that are happening using the technology. So, you know, that we think that's really, really important. And we did an article saying, talking about fintech firms and how some are adopting cryptocurrencies, but not all of them are. And we've given examples of what eBay and Amazon and Shopify in Canada, you know, what they're doing and how they're looking to embrace these sort of digital assets. Because digital assets per se are coming down the track big style. And what I mean by that is, again, look what's happening in China, whereby now a third of their population have a digital wallet, which means they can then interact using the Chinese state's owned, controlled, issued Chinese digital currency. So it's being proved, and it goes back to your point, a digital currency, and it could be like a stable coin, or it could be something backed by, you know, real cash or real asset like real estate. How it's enabling people to be more included in the financial system and process. So it's acting as an oil to, if you like, to oil and make the whole financial system and whole society run a lot smoother. And that's where we see there's some really interesting opportunities and profound changes for all of us. It doesn't matter where you live. This is going to impact all of us.
If it's for the good, if it's, you know, like, so Klarna, I'm a big fan of Klarna. I remember when Klarna was nobody, right? I was on some website one day, and I was like, oh, what is this, pay $8 a month for 9 months, and I can own this thingy? Never heard of it. Pretty cool, right? Now, Klarna is 90 million wide as far as customers go. My son looks for the logo now when he buys something. They're not talking about accepting crypto anytime soon, right?
No.
But they offer a value add in terms of putting products and services in reach of people that are not necessarily willing to write a check for a grand.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, they, as I say, we said in this week's Digital Bytes, their chief marketing officer, David Sandstrom, he reckons 70% of American millennials don't have a credit card because, you know, they fear that sort of, you know, dreaded sort of getting into debt and suddenly finding they can't afford bits and pieces. And so what Klarna have been really, really successful at developing. And, you know, Klarna is, you know, it's a Swedish business. It's the biggest fintech company in the whole of Europe. And they've got this that they offer buy now, pay later. And so therefore, you know, if you want to go and buy a $100 pair of jeans, you haven't got $100. Well, you can spread that over
3 or 4 months. But the trouble is, though, is that they then charge, you know, let's keep the math simple. They then charge $10. And you think, oh, that's okay. I don't mind paying $10. I can spread it over 3 months. Well, $10 over 3 months is nearly 40%. That's what it's costing.
I gotcha. It's an interest rate that doesn't even trigger in my mind.
Doesn't even compute. You think, no, that's $10. What does it matter? I haven't got $100 now. I can get those jeans or whatever it may well be. So, you know, they're built a huge successful business off the back of it. But how transparent, how open is that? Because at the end of the day, people don't understand interest rates. They just get really confused. And annual percentage rate, APR. Now, I had a friend and she thought when it said 26 APR, she thought you had to pay it on the 26th of April. And I go, no. It means you're paying an interest rate of 26%. So, using sort of blockchain technology and getting actually people with much more transparency using some of these digital currencies, hopefully will mean that people are going to be more aware of it. And you've got these companies out there. We put some figures in this week's Digital Bytes about the Super Bowl, which you Americans love the Super Bowl, don't you, James?
We do, especially with all the crypto commercials now.
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, you got people like eToro and Coinbase and Crypto.com and FTX. FTX were giving away $1 million worth of Bitcoin just as part of their marketing promotion stuff. But it was alleged that you had 112 million viewers watching Super Bowl. And just 30-second advert this year was 27% more than last year, because you had all these crypto outfits vying for advertising space because they were saying, you know, oh, it's the target market we want. And, you know, you're running at sort of people that have bought crypto assets in, you know, many countries is running at between 15 and 20%. So we're seeing greater adoption of this as people begin to understand. And I don't think it's just driven by greed. I've got to buy some of this stuff because I want to become a crypto billionaire. I don't think it's that at all. People are beginning to see that you can buy and sell assets, in a much more efficient way online, 24 hours a day. You don't have to make an appointment with your bank manager, your stockbroker, or financial advisor. And this raises a big question. And indeed, I was talking to the CEO of the Australian Stockbroker Association. And she was saying, you know, where does this lead us as a in terms of an industry that has historically given people investment recommendations of which share to buy and sell? And I said, well, Judith, as Judith Fisher is the CEO, I said, Judith, to me, as someone been involved in managing people's money, running a fund management business for years, the key thing that the stockbrokers have is trust. And they've got clients who trust them for their services and their advice. And that's very, very difficult to replicate. And sure, you can do commission-free dealing. And sure, you'll have digital assets with bots that will do automatic rebalancing your portfolio. And all of that is here. And it's become more and more widespread. But the key attribute that many professional advisory businesses have, whether you're a stockbroker or whether you're a lawyer, you know, is the fact that you have clients that trust you. And that trust is a very valuable but very, very intangible asset. So it's got to be respected by those advisors. So they're going to have to embrace these digital assets. They're going to have to accept the fact that there's no way they can keep up with machines that can trade 24 hours a day when they're just, you know, trading the stock market, which may be open for just a few hours. So change is coming in many, many different fields, as a result of the sort of ever-increasing march of digitalization and technology in our society.
Yeah. In fact, I saw Jordan Belfort talking about Bitcoin the other day, and he's still into it. It's like it hasn't changed from 1993, 1994. He's riding the honesty bandwagon today, but he's on the Bitcoin bandwagon. Like you said, he started off, you know, hawking what we call pink sheets over here. You know, the over-the-counter bulletin board type stocks.
Yep.
And now in 2022, he's hawking Bitcoin the same way. He's like, the only complaint you're going to have is that you didn't buy more.
But James, it's interesting. People often say, you know, you're a bit of an old fart, Johnny. You've been around, you know, the markets, you know, for a little while. How do you honestly see crypto? And I just see so many comparisons between cryptocurrencies and, as you say, the pink sheets in the US. It was the big board in Vancouver, in Canada. And in the UK, what they were called penny shares. And all of those explanations or definitions, basically they all revolve around small cap, illiquid stocks and shares. And sure, you know, some of those companies went on to become, you know, the Apple, the Facebook, the Amazon, et cetera. But we're talking about a very, very small percentage. And I, you know, I've got a number of institutional clients and friends who are managing portfolios, you know, worth billions. And very rarely do they buy individual small company shares. They tend to buy a fund that invests in small companies. And this is what I think we're going to see, certainly with cryptocurrencies. Instead of you going out and buying Ethereum or Bitcoin or, you know, Cardano or Stratos or any other company, you're going to end up buying a fund that invests in those cryptocurrencies. So if you remember a couple of weeks ago, we had that company, Casey, K-A-S-E-I. Well, it's like a fund, but it's a quoted company listed on the Aquis exchange in London. And they're basically investing in that company, Casey. They're actually investing in a bunch of cryptocurrencies. So rather than you go and try and decide which one do I buy, you can just buy a company or you can buy a fund and leave it to a professional fund manager. So if you're 2-3% that if you want to put into a crypto, well, get the diversification, get the professional management, and then you should focus on, if you like, where's the rest of your money, or how is this technology going to impact on my life? And when you go and buy those £100 pair of jeans, you know, and it looks like Klarna are doing you a huge favor, just make sure you understand what the actual cost is. And may, rather than buying them today, just perhaps steal yourself and say, well, why don't I wait for 3 months and then I can buy them and I don't have to pay that effectively, that 40% cost of debt. But we all want it today. We live in that society where I want it now.
Yeah, I think once they iron out all the framework and the gotchas and the regulations, and we allow the right people, unfortunately, to have their hand in it, because it's inevitable anyway, we'll be able to see how tokenization begins to impact society.
Yeah. Well, and that, because you are a professional on the radio station, is exactly what we got coming after the break. As I said earlier on, we got Alex Bausch, who's chairman of Two Tokens in Amsterdam. For regular listeners, we have had Alex on the radio before. He's joining us from Amsterdam and looking at sort of tokenization and its impact on business and society, and how, yes, it can make it much more inclusive in terms of digital assets and acting as a way of exchange. And very much, and again, if you remember going back to, we had Brian Coyne on the show a couple of weeks ago from Casey. And he was talking about, you know, in the 80s and 90s, it was very much greed is good and whoever dies with most toys wins. And it was very much me, me, me. And it was almost like a moment of epiphany when he realized what was behind a lot of these digital projects and realized it was much more about the community. And certainly I know Alex will be touching on sort of the community and how that's important, that the community and the regulators are working together to create the right standards for this new asset class that's coming around. And I'm sure that Alex, he won't be talking about cryptocurrency at all, but he will be talking about how digital assets and the tokenization, you know, for goods and services and, you know, renewable energy and things like that, how that's going to potentially impact and what do we need to speed that process up and really unlock some of the power of some of the stuff we've now been talking about.
Yeah, which is actually an important reminder, right? Because cryptocurrency and the actual blockchain and distributed ledger technology, they ride together, but they're all unique. You know, one is not necessarily the other.
True. Very true.
Let the experts talk about that, right? That would be you and him.
Don't know about that. But the other thing, James, can you just tell listeners, because we get a lot of inquiries, how do I listen to a previous show? Can you just give them an update? Because Cyber FM, you know, you're always innovating and you've got some exciting news about some of the video stuff. You're not just audio, are you?
We are becoming I'd make Adam Curry proud. We're going to become MTV, right? No, we're slowly introducing video. Very heavily, primarily, it will be live concerts, you know, because we're music first and foremost.
Yep.
You know, live music. We're getting into the metaverse, and we automatically, it's funny. I talk a lot about accessibility and inclusiveness, right? Especially with a physical disability. And I believe that with the metaverse, a lot of those rules are going to apply. So when we were discussing how we're going to introduce video and virtually television for music, which is MTV, I'm not going to, there's no other way to put it, for a live concert, there are people that will not have access to the metaverse. But we are going to want to perform a metaverse concert. So it only made sense that we're going to be able to, not only are we going to really toot my own horn and win over the proper way to throw a live music concert in the metaverse, not only are we going to accomplish that, but we're going to allow people in the regular non-metaverse, the in real life, or maybe we call it, is that the universe, to actually participate in the same exact concert. That's really what this video capability is going to do. But we're also going to have regular concerts over video. You know, maybe a couple of, maybe you and I will do one of these shows with video, right? I'll cut my hair, you'll dye yours, we'll be okay.
Yeah. Oh, I'll get my old, my big 70s collar on or something, shall I? Or my cheesecloth shirt. I'm not doing punk hair. I did that once. Didn't look good. Did you ever do punk?
I had the tail. Remember the rat tail?
Yeah, yeah.
Like 1985, 80s, and they dyed it blonde. Right. So I was a brunette and then I had the little blonde rat tail and half of an Italian mustache, you know, puberty. Puberty was rough. And if you download the CyberFM app at cyber.fm, you can hear my regular shows, my radio shows. Tuesday, you participated last Tuesday, right? Did you love that show? I was like,
Johnny wants to hear some Barry White.
And we played Barry White. We played a Billy Joel cover.
Billy Joel cover.
Right.
And you had your competition, which no one's yet won. Do you want to just tell the listeners before we go about that?
So the entire CyberFM infrastructure, right? The people are asking how to hear this show, and we're winding up giving them the whole thing. So CyberFM uses an algorithm that we created in-house so that the people that are earning CyberFM cryptocurrency, we don't necessarily want them to know exactly how much they earn exactly when, because then you'll have these hackers and these geniuses trying to game the system, right? It's not unrealistic for any company to have a little super secret little thing in order to unravel the true secret. So we call it the Billy Joel algorithm, and the Billy Joel algorithm has been live since we debuted the product in 2018 for cryptocurrency. And all the Billy Joel algorithm is that it would, if you were to figure out the Billy Joel algorithm, you would know exactly how to earn your peak amount of CyberFM at particular your listening time, right? Everybody's going to, if I listen for half an hour, I earn X. If I listen to 7 songs, I earn Y. If I listen to 3.5 songs and then pause for 2 minutes, you blow the whole thing up. And that's called the Billy Joel algorithm. Nobody has figured out the actual equation or the answer to the Billy Joel algorithm, and yet we have it as a contest. We're not even sure what we're going to give away because we have enough time in the world to decide what the grand prize would be. If you could figure out the Billy Joel algorithm, the answer is in the entertainer. And I will play that song, and I will say, once in a while, you guys bring it up and you ask, you want to figure out the Billy Joel algorithm? The answer is right here. And I'll play the entertainer from Billy Joel.
Okay, and so next week, James, I think we'll start the show with the entertainer, good old Billy Joel. And on a serious note, you know, anyone listening to James and I, you know, we're very fortunate. We get a pretty wide audience now listening to us on a regular basis. You do realize that you can earn, you know, CyberFM tokens, so you can actually listen and earn a digital asset just by listening into cyber.fm. So thoroughly recommend you to sign up. And if you can solve the algorithm, well, who knows how many cryptos you're going to get courtesy of cyber.fm.
It could be like Willy Wonka. I'm going to wind up handing him the keys to the organization, right?
The golden ticket. The golden ticket.
The golden ticket. I'll have Billy Joel get on his motorcycle and bring you a private key to a wallet. That might be what the grand prize would have to be.
Well, I'm going to get my daughter listening. Who knows? She might turn out to be the Uptown Girl.
The Uptown Girl figures out the Billy Joel algorithm. He would respond to that. We would have to get Billy Joel. Right.
Right, James. We better wrap this up. And because coming after the break, as I say, we've got Alex Balch from Two Tokens, and he's talking about tokenization society. But and if anyone wants to get a copy of this week's Digital Bytes or ongoing edition, then just contact obviously James Tiley at Cyber.fm, or he's on LinkedIn, and myself, Johnny Fry, JONNYFRY on LinkedIn, happily to send you the hard copy, the good old fashioned. Well, we don't physically mail it out, but we do email it every Wednesday. It sort of goes out Wednesday morning, London time. So I actually sent it last night. I was about to have a barbecue with my daughter, and we said, oh, God, you've got to do Digital Bytes. So I sent it out Tuesday night, which was, no, I'll get my days wrong now. It was Wednesday night, Sydney time, which
for
was
you,
Wednesday was, morning. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, we got it yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so what's we got?
The opposite side of the world.
I know.
Screw up down the easiest person.
All right. We'll chat after the break, but thanks. Thanks again.
Yeah. So in between now and the next show, go to cyber.fm, click on our faces, you download the app, you'll have a grand old time.
And don't forget Billy Joel next week.
Billy Joel, we're going to remember that.
Want to have fun? The next time you're in a computer store, set all the laptops to cyber.fm. Go ahead, turn them up real loud. And if the salesperson gets angry, tell them, we told you it was okay. This is cyber.fm.
Alrighty. I sound okay?
You do? I do like your Barry White voice, though. If you can sort of just go down a tone.
Just bring it down a hair.
Barry White over here, huh?
Yeah. Okay, we got through that. That's the Tuesday show.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's my Tuesday show that I got to do in 6 hours.
Yep. Is it live or is it recorded?
That one's live.
Oh.
That's why I accidentally hit... We have all these preset buttons, you know, like...
Thank you for creeping up my night, and Jesus be with you.
I have that button, too.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Come on, James, we're going to run out of bloody Zoom time.
Okay. God. It's radio. It's supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
It will be.
It will be, yeah, so far. 3, 2, 1. Hey, we're back and we're a mess. Well, Johnny's a mess. I'm not a mess. I'm always on point. But Johnny will get saved today. He brought over his friend Alex from Two Tokens, and Two Tokens is writing an article all about how tokenization will change society, hopefully for the better. What do you think, Johnny?
Well, it should be for the better, but you can never tell with Alex because I think his mum put him on growth hormones as a little boy or put him in baby bio, and he's so tall. He really shouldn't be writing about tokens. He should be writing about sort of basketball or something like that.
Oh, come on.
Testosterone
bush or something like that. But Alex, welcome to the Digital Bytes show. Welcome back for regular listeners who you'll have heard Alex's dulcet Dutch tones all the way. You're off duty this week, aren't you? Because you have been out in the hinterland, keeping the North Sea out of Holland with your finger in the dike, I understand.
Yeah.
Good to have you back on the radio show.
Yeah, back on the road. That's right.
Yeah. So, Alex, for the newer listeners, be great just to give us a bit of overview of what were you doing before you got involved in sort of tokenization and blockchain and stuff like that. And then, if you wouldn't mind, just give us a quick update on what Two Tokens are and, you know, what are they trying to do. And then we'll sort of, you know, rattle into the article if that's okay.
That's okay. Yeah. Sounds good. Sounds like a plan. So my name is Alex Balch. I've always been an entrepreneur, always in mobile and ICT and what have you. I have a technical background. And prior to Two Tokens, and that's how Johnny and I got to know one another. You know, I was traveling the world doing blockchain masterclasses. We did a lot of crypto economy tours in London, Sydney, San Francisco, all over the world. And then at the end of 2018, right before crypto winter hit, we were looking at ourselves and said, you know, what about adoption? You were creating all these beautiful infrastructures and nobody's using them. You know, certainly not my mom and or my daughter or my mother-in-law. And so that's when we all started thinking about who's going to use all this and how do we get to adoption. And so in that time frame, it was the port of Rotterdam and Europe said, you know, this is all very interesting. Could you create a roadmap of what companies and organizations need to do if they were to do something with crypto or tokenization, Bitcoin, blockchain, the whole mumbo jumbo? But and if you do that, could you make that an interactive roadmap? But please don't use the word crypto, mumbo jumbo, Bitcoin, and what have you, because that's scary.
No white papers.
No white papers, just hands on and show me the money. And said, okay, you know, we'll do it. We won't use the word Bitcoin and crypto and Ethereum and any of those technical terms. We said, you know, it's all about the token economy. And tokens have been around since the old Greek, ancient Greeks. And so we said, let's create a roadmap on how to use the token economy. And in those days, the first books on token economy had well been published, you know, and you and I, we all know that tokens are what makes the blockchain run. But we were more interested in showing the use cases and showing, you know, where the business lies. And we didn't want to have academic projects. We wanted to show the world, society, you know, what tokenization projects are already in production. And that's how this project came to be.
Brilliant. And I understand, obviously, T-Tokens is very much focused on the commercial development. And you're running a number of projects at the moment, very much looking at how the technology and creating of tokens can be used in that commercial environment. But you're also partly funded by the EU, I understand.
That's correct. So we were initially asked to create that roadmap, and we thought, let's just do a 9-month project and create an interactive roadmap to show people what a utility token is, what a security token is, what kind of legal regulatory rules they need to abide by. And of course, when you start that, it's like a rabbit hole, right? It's a lot more difficult than you think. And but what's more, when we started the project, Facebook announced their token ideas back then in June 2019, and all of a sudden everybody wanted to be part of this. So the gist of it is, a year later, we had over 1,200 people participating in our discussions, roundtables, use cases, all good fun. But that wasn't the idea to begin with, you know. And we said at our board of advisors, we had a long list of 25, 30 projects that were doing something with tokenization. And whether it was an ICO or an asset tokenization or, you know, any of the above. And with our board of advisors, we chose 3. And so every year we do 3 use cases, working groups that look at the business case about best, you know, what value is being transferred. We do a legal review. We do the token taxonomy creation. And in that case, we work together with the IWA, Interwork Alliance, which is now part of GBBC. Because it's important that you create standards, right? And so the use cases that we did, the working groups that we had the first year, was creating a bill of lading, an electronic bill of lading token that's used between the port of Rotterdam, port of Singapore. Right? So this has actually been put in production. There was another project working group on raising capital.
Hang on. I'm just mindful that, you know, the show goes out literally to, you know, 140 countries around the world. So can you just explain very simplistic terms, what do you mean by a bill of lading between Rotterdam and Singapore? Obviously, Rotterdam and Singapore are two of the biggest commercial ports in the world, shipping thousands and thousands of containers, you know, between Asia and Europe. But what do you mean in simplistic terms, a bill of lading, and what are some of the challenges that you believe that tokenization can help address on that sort of basis?
Well, bills of lading have been around for 600-700 years, right? And they are actually, every jurisdiction has it in the law that a bill of lading needs to be physical and needs to be stamped and is used to transfer ownership of, in this case, containers, for instance. Do you recall the pandemic? Remember? You
know, yeah, I remember that, just yeah. about.
Well, yeah, 2020, the first wave.
We had a pandemic?
Yeah, we had a pandemic. What do you know? So no planes were flying. So whilst the ships were underway, you know, and they take, you know, anywhere between 24 and 30 days from China to the Europe, the documents clearing the bills of lading, you know, didn't arrive because there was no planes going. Yeah, so you see what happened, you know. So containers were offloaded and they couldn't be cleared by customs. So electronic bills of lading have been around also, but now to transfer an electronic bill of lading in a supply chain between all those parties that are, you know, that to do that you need a, you know, you need a token, and so an ERC 721 token was created to transfer those bills of lading between all the parties in the supply chain. So that's how that came to be, and of course some laws need to be changed, but. So that this is also accepted in transferring cargo. But this was clearly one working group, one use case that was very hands-on, if you will.
Right. Okay, so you've got a situation whereby a bill of lading is like a list of what's in the ships, what's being imported from where and where. So you know what you're dealing with. And as you say, every country insists that the people moving stuff around the world, so you know what's coming in and out of your country. And you had a crazy situation whereby normally that's sent by sort of bundles of paper on an aeroplane because it gets to Europe or gets to Asia faster. And you had all these physical containers sitting on ships on the harbour side, and they couldn't be unloaded because the authorities said, well, we don't know what's in what boat, in very simplistic terms.
Yeah. And so what people don't realise, you know, this is also a tokenization use case, right? Because you transfer digital documents using blockchains with a token.
Okay. And so what was your second one you did? So bill of lading was your first one.
Yeah. So we also said, let's just show the world that it's very easy to create a utility token that gives access to infrastructure, and that you don't need special legislation for that. So we did show that this could be done, and we did that with a local bank here in the Netherlands. But by far the most difficult use case was to show that we could raise money with a token, and you know, put that money in a token in a company, and have that and deal with that token in a fully regulated electronic exchange here in Amsterdam. And so that was that use case, that working group was called Next Generation Capital.
Right. Okay. And then the third one, I think even more topical, given what's happening with potential energy supplies, you know, in Europe at the moment. Is it Sunnyfed?
In the second year, 22, yeah, last year, we started a working group on tokenizing energy. See, if you have a digital infrastructure, the use for a token is very apparent. You know, if I am to tokenize my shares, Johnny, mm-hmm. I go to a lawyer or a notary and I stamp my shares and no real need to tokenize it, you know, or digitize it, right? But if I want to transfer energy from my solar panels to your Tesla, you know, I can't do that with paper. That's a digital infrastructure. So to tokenize energy, you know, whether it's tokenized energy assets such as solar panels or such as windmills, a tokenization lends itself very well to that, right? And so that was a working group that we started in May of last year.
So there you got an example of, I think everyone can hopefully grasp the idea of tokenizing, digitizing, putting sort of a digital wrapper around something that we all know and understand, which is, you know, a share, a bond, you know, maybe a commodity. But what's interesting there is that you're actually tokenizing and being able to effectively capture the information, the data about the amount of solar power that's been generated in one location. And then that can be tracked and traced to the end user. So when companies, you know, Google is a good example. I know they're saying they want to go green. They want to make sure all the power that they consume, and they consume a lot of power with their servers, they want to be able to identify and assure their shareholders and their users that they're only using green energy. Well, in order to do that, someone's got to be able to track and trace where the energy's come from. And I suppose what you're saying, that's a good example of what you've done there, of being able to track and trace on that basis.
Yeah, so the partners in the, because Two Tokens is a non-for-profit public foundation that aims to advocate the use of tokenization and clarify. But so our partners that work these use cases that, you know, bring technology and know-how to the working group. And one of those partners created a so-called crypto anchor, which is a physical device that's placed on a solar panel. And this physical device, the crypto anchor, is a sensor that measures how much energy there is. And that sensor, that data, is then put on a chain, right? Is placed on the blockchain. And by doing that, you know, it allows you to tokenize, you know, how much energy is being produced by that particular panel. But you could also tokenize other data that comes off the panel, such as carbon credits, right? Nowadays, it takes up to 30 days to create a carbon credit certificate. But by using a crypto anchor, you could do it almost in real time. And this is a great use case in making sure that green energy, solar energy, is really green and it's not being greenwashed by adding some brown coal plant, you know, to and make it seem like it's green.
Right.
So these are the types of use cases that we not only work on, but these are actually being put in production, just like the electronic bill of lading that I just told you about. That's now Navi Porta in the port. You know, doing energy like this, that's also being done by several industry partners all around the world, in Australia, in Austria, in Rome, in Germany. This is not new, and that's why it's important to show that this technology is here, it's not going away, and we're on the road to adoption.
Brilliant. And what I find particularly refreshing about all of this, though, Alex, and is that we haven't once mentioned the sort of the dreaded cryptocurrency and saying, oh, you're creating tokens to try and turn people into millionaires. And hopefully this thing, you know, some Dogecoin, Shiba coin or any other dodgy coin will suddenly go up in value. What you're doing is actually using the technology to actually meet and solve real commercial challenges and make those businesses more efficient, more transparent. I think that's got to be great news because there's more applications for the technology in the tokenization rather than just trying to create the next sort of meme coin.
Yeah, so this is really what we call high definition economics, right? We're in a transition to the next phase, you know, and tokenizing the economy brings more granularity in everything that we do. And so we have to be mindful of what sectors, because in the end, every sector in society is going to be affected by this one way or another. And so like you rightfully said, initially, you know, our thought was, so this could be a great technology if we were to apply this to help finance small and medium enterprise that have difficulty in financing their business. And so we had thought, as naive as we were in 2018, let's use the ICO mechanism to fund small and medium enterprise companies in the port. Well, you and I know that the banks and the regulators have different thoughts on this, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the technology is not the right solution for all these other sectors. And so that is what we aim to do with the Two Tokens Foundation, to show and inform and inspire those entrepreneurs, those organizations, that this is really here to help them.
Okay. And to be fair, for those of you listeners that aren't aware, you know, our clog-wielding friends, the Dutch, do have a bit of form. You know, when it comes to sort of breakthroughs and commercialization, you know, you've got to bear in mind it was the Dutch that effectively set up the first joint stock company, which are sort of limited companies as we now know them. And indeed, the Dutch actually came up with a funny old thing called a stock exchange. So, you know, if the Dutch brains... And, you know, but to be fair, you're not just working in Holland. This is very much a pan-European organization you've got. But it's, you know, I would keep your eye open on what they're doing, because, you know, if you come up with the wacky idea called a stock exchange, which is end up creating, you know, as we know, a lot of certainly the Western economies, as we now know them, then you could well be onto something equally interesting when you talk about tokenization and how it can be used in a commercial environment. So, yeah, really, really interesting. James, what are your thoughts there in sunny America?
Well, I'm a fan of anything that says two tokens. You know, we ourselves are a dual token economy.
Of course.
Your tokens, when you demonstrated this, you said they're all ERC-721?
No, it really depends on the working on the use case, right? In the working group electronic bill of lading, that was an ERC-721 token. And to be sure, we are agnostic to the technology. If you create a good token taxonomy, you know, it shouldn't matter what, in theory, it shouldn't matter whether it's Ethereum, ERC-721, or EOS, or whatever. You know, you can only create a token taxonomy if you know within the ecosystem of players, of stakeholders, what value it is that you want to transfer. So it's very important that you first understand the business case and what value you want to tokenize and transfer. And only then can you ascertain what kind of token and what kind of chain this is going to live on.
Okay. Right, because I was thinking about Ethereum earlier, and the gas prices were so volatile. I wondered how, fast forward from 2018 to today, you know, are you getting feedback about cost?
Yeah, so in the case of the maritime ESC, that ERC-721 token was obviously not on the mainnet. It would have been too costly to send a bill of lading. So they used their own Ethereum net off the mainnet. But to your point, James, look, take in mind, you know, a token that's used for solar panels. There's a lot of solar panels. That's a lot of data. So you don't want those gas fees. And so you always have to keep that in mind with the business case. And every business case is different.
Right. No, exactly.
Right. Well, and before you go, Alex, what's the next, you know, without sort of letting the cat out of the bag, so to speak, what are the next steps? What are Two Tokens hoping to do over the next sort of the rest of 2022?
So I'm a vintage 64. My generation has been in digitization for...
Oh, are you that old? I didn't know you were that old.
Better part of 30 years, really. Yeah. I'm younger than you, Johnny, so...
all right. Well, everyone's younger than me these days.
No, but we need to...
Get out of it, James. Turn that off.
That was not me. I only push dirty buttons.
Steady. Sorry, Alex.
No, but you know, we need to continue the education process and do that by showing real examples, real life examples, and also have the dialogue and with the different groups, whether they are legal regulatory people, whether they are financial people, whether they are entrepreneurs. You need to bring them together because it's a cross-sector thingy, right? This whole tokenization. You can't tokenize anything if you're just you. You need to work. You need to identify who are the stakeholders, who are you working with, and what does this look like?
Yeah, so it's not just in silos, really, is it?
You've
got to look across the whole sort of spectrum of who interacts with, and to try and take out those intermediaries and sort of middle people that currently are costing sort of business and society. They're all taking the fee, which isn't making it as efficient.
And what's more, tokens know no borders, right? As you know, yeah. Every country have their own rules and regulations. And within Europe, there is a proposed MiCA regulation on the table. United States have their own plans, but we need to make sure that we align and we create standards.
Brilliant.
That's,
okay.
That's what we're all about.
Alex, thank you very much for joining us. And actually, in a couple of weeks, we've asked SunnyFed to come on. And I know they're writing an article about the use of blockchain technology and digital assets in their renewable energy field. And so for regular listeners, they'll be able to hear a little bit more information about that particular example that you mentioned that you'd helped transform their business and making much more transparency around sort of renewable energy. But James, that's kind of it for another week. Thank you very much for getting things organized your end. Alex, before we go, what's the best way for people to get hold of you? LinkedIn, I assume, is that the best bet? Or Two Tokens, is it twotokens.org?
Twotokens.org. You know, we're organizing webinars and we are creating podcasts. If you're interested to listen, it's all available. Two Tokens podcast, really on the different use cases and people that have to say something about NFTs and what kind of applications are there. Twotokens.org. You can find us there.
Fantastic. Okay, well, Alex, thanks very much. And be good once you've decided the next sort of cohort of examples and challenges you're going to try and solve, we'll get you back on and get an update. But thanks again. So James, thank you. And if anyone obviously wants to have a copy of Alex's article in this week's Digital Bytes, you can either contact James Tiley at cyber.fm or myself, Johnny Fry at Team Blockchain, and we'll get you a copy of the article, indeed this week's Digital Bytes that it's appeared in. So James, that's it for another week. I don't know, any final thoughts before you go? We're sort of middle of the way through March now. So, things are moving on at a pace.
Another day, another way.
That's true. Okay. All right. Well, thanks very much. And we'll be back on the air next week with a new guest and new information from Digital Bytes. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.